Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and we are back with another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I am Peter Schiff. I am taking your calls live at 888-678-9597 this Wednesday evening, where I am here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And we also do the show on my website at www.europac.net and on shortwave radio on 5.07 megahertz. And again, the number is 888-678-9597. Well, I am headed tomorrow for San Francisco for the Money Show. We have presentations on Friday and Saturday. I know we actually had to get a second room because we had so many people signing up for our private event. I think we've got probably 300. I think we probably stopped the emails because we had a hard time even getting enough room. We have to have an overflow room to accommodate the Euro Pacific Capital people who are at the San Francisco Money Show. So it'll be nice to meet a number of you at this show. If you're not going up to San Francisco, the next presentation I think I'll be at will be down in New Orleans for the investment conference in November. And then there's another money show, I believe, in February in Orlando. But there might still be time to register for the San Francisco Money Show if you haven't already done so. I'm going to be speaking this Friday and Saturday at the Marriott in San Francisco at the Money Show. It's a free conference, so certainly if you live in the Bay Area, you know, all you got to do is call up and register, get a free badge, and you can come by and meet me. And, you know, we've got a few guys from the L.A. office, I think, and also the Newport Beach office that will be up manning the booth in San Francisco. So it should be worth your time if you can stop by. Well, again, I wanted to spend the first segment again talking about what's happening in the markets. I know I'm fielding emails. I know the emails are relatively few relative to the number of accounts that we have, but there are people that are expressing sentiment that they're upset that their accounts are down, that somehow they think that my strategy is wrong, that we recommended buying foreign stocks, and that here these foreign stocks are down, and therefore, you know, the strategy is wrong. You know, the strategy isn't wrong. If you read Crash Proof, and you'll know that in that book, I wrote about the fact that it's possible that many of the foreign stocks that we're buying could actually see declines in sympathy with the U.S. market. And for that reason, I recommended maintaining some amount of liquidity in your account, whether it's 10%, 20%, 30%, in things like currencies, foreign currency CDs, money markets, liquid assets, so that you could take advantage of those declines. Because I knew there was a possibility that foreign markets would fall in sympathy with ours. This wasn't something that came out of left field that I thought had a zero possibility. But I also said that I didn't want to stay in cash 100% because there was a possibility that foreign stocks could fall because I didn't exactly know when they would fall or by how much. And I thought that long term there was a lot of risk to owning just cash, even if it's foreign currencies, because of the tremendous amount of inflation being created all over the world. So I thought that it made sense to own these assets, especially considering the fact that the dividend yield that we were getting on these portfolios were very high. So we were getting paid a lot more to own stocks than what we would be paid to own cash. And the fact that many of the stocks, in fact, the majority of the stocks that we've been buying for clients have fallen in price over the past 2 to 3 months, some rather substantially, but overall our portfolios seem to have declined about the same percentages as the overall markets are down in the U.S. or abroad. And that's despite the fact that the U.S. dollar has actually risen in value The New Zealand dollar hit a 52-week low, yesterday. So some of these currencies have come off by more than 10% from their highs. And of course, when you're dealing with foreign stocks and you've got the dollar rising and then you've got foreign stocks falling, when you own foreign stocks, you've got that double whammy on your current market value. But none of this should be of concern because this is all noise in the market. This is all noise. In the final analysis, none of these prices are going to matter. I mean, they matter if you sell, right? If for some reason you have a financial emergency that we didn't foresee and you need to liquidate your account, and unfortunately the stocks happen to be down when you do that, then it's unfortunate that the stocks are down. And hopefully nobody is investing money that they know they're going to need in a short period of time. And of course, if you don't think you're going to need it and then circumstances change and you do need it, that's the risk of the stock market. You know, the risk is that these assets might not be worth what you paid for them if you need to sell them at an inopportune time. But if you don't need to sell your stocks, which should be the case for just about all the clients at Euro Pacific Capital, the fact that when you get a statement today and your account is 10 or 15 or 20% lower than it was, you know, 3 months ago or 6 months ago, it doesn't mean anything because we're not going to sell even if the stocks were 20% higher. Our advice would be the same. We would just be holding. You know, we're not transacting at these prices. In fact, I got an email from a client who was upset that his account had gone down, and I talked to his broker, and they still had about 20% of the portfolio in cash. Now, why this individual was upset that stocks were going down when he had a good weighting in cash, where the idea was to hold on to cash so that if stocks went down, we could buy more at better prices. You know, people should be happy. I know psychologically it's difficult to be happy when the stocks that you already own have fallen. But the idea is we're putting new money to work. And it's better to put new money to work when stocks are down than when stocks are up. So rather than being excited about the opportunity to buy more stocks cheaper, which is the very reason that we left money in cash, he's upset because the stocks he already bought have gone down. But you know what? It doesn't matter. None of it matters. You know, what matters is in the end, in the final analysis, and that's what my strategy is about. I don't pretend that invest with Euro Pacific Capital because every time you open your statement, the account's going to go higher in dollars. I don't claim that. That's not what we're trying to do. And that shouldn't even be a goal. It doesn't really matter. You know, short-term thinking is what got this country into this mess. You know, I was reading a story interview with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, one of these companies, and, you know, they said, well, the reason we lowered our lending standards was because everybody else was lowering their lending standards, and we didn't want to lose market share. The guy said, we can't do one thing when everybody else is doing the opposite. Well, why not? But that was short-term thinking. They were thinking of short-term market share. So in order to preserve their short-term profitability, they destroyed the company. They would have been much better off to forego those opportunities, to stick to tight lending standards, and they'd be in much better shape. You know, who wants that? Who wants to maintain market share when the market is lending money to people who can't pay you back? And, you know, the same thing was said. I read an article in the New York Times regarding a bank that had huge losses on option arms. And they talked about how, on the article, they mentioned how they had lowered their standards because they were losing businesses. They said, initially we resisted it and we kept our standards high for loans, but then we kept losing businesses because all the mortgage brokers were going to other banks to get financing, and so then they lowered their standards to get back in the game, and, you know, for a while they made money and now they're paying the price. You know, so this is the kind of thinking that you want to get away from. It doesn't matter. The fact that, you know, these banks were making money for a while in subprime mortgages didn't validate the strategy. You know, and it's the same thing in the late 90s when I was on the phone cold calling. You know, before I had much of a following, I was cold calling people. And my whole pitch back then was, you got to get out of the NASDAQ. You got to sell your tech stocks and your internet stocks, and you got to buy foreign, you know, REITs, and you got to buy oil stocks and gold stocks. And, you know, most people just hung up the phone on me. But this was my pitch, and, you know, I would talk to people, you know, in 98, and I might call them again in 99 or 2000. They would be laughing at me. They'd make fun of me. Hey, you told me to sell this stock, and look how much it's gone up, and you don't know what you're talking about, and look at how much money I would have lost if I would have followed your advice, and I'm making all this money. And I used to tell people, you're not making anything. You only think you're making. I would say, did you sell those stocks? Well, no. Why would I sell them? All right, well, call me when you sell. Because I said, the only thing you're going to have to show for these profits is the memory of the profits that you never took, because they're all going to vanish. And ultimately, by 2001, 2002, I would have conversations with these people, and I would hear their sob stories. I should have listened to you. I wish I listened to you. But, you know, for a while, it looked like I was wrong, because the stocks I was telling them not to buy or to sell kept going up. But it didn't matter, because in the end, they collapsed. And the fact that for a while they were ahead meant nothing, because they lost in the end. And the same thing, I think, is going to be true. People who opened up accounts with me 6 months ago, a year ago, and they believed what I said, and they read Crash Proof, or they saw me on television, and we bought them a portfolio of stocks, and now 6 months or a year later or 3 months later, you're down 10 or 20%, you know, it's not going to matter. In the scheme of things, it's not going to matter. Because what matters is what the portfolio is worth when the music stops, at the end of the game. I think I'm dealing every one of my clients a winning hand. All you have to do is hold on to it till the end of the game. You know, some people, it's unfortunate. They see their stocks going down, and they feel that we've done something wrong because the stocks are down, and they want to sell. We haven't done anything wrong. Right? I think we've done everything right. Now, could our timing have been better? Well, of course, but we don't make any claims to be market timers. And I think the risk is too great to try to time the market, because any night we go to sleep, we could make wake up and the dollar could collapse. And, you know, so I don't want to do it. I think we're safer owning good foreign companies than owning dollars. And, you know, some people have sent emails and they said, hey, you talk about conservative stocks, yet, you know, my account is down. Just because we say a stock is conservative doesn't mean the stock can't go down. Right? We're talking about conservative stocks, as opposed to aggressive stocks or, you know, speculative stocks. So when I say a conservative stock, I'm talking about a basic business with good visibility on its earnings, a reliable earnings stream, a stock that trades at a relatively low multiple relative to its growth rate, a stock that has a high and consistent history of paying dividends, you know, as opposed to aggressive stocks, right, that trade at high multiples, that pay no dividends. That are fads that have only been around for a short period of time. You don't really know, you know, if they're going to be around, where the products that they're selling are, you know, you don't really know if the product's going to, you know, like Crocs or something, where you don't know if it's going to be in fashion that from 1 year to year, the management can make us, could screw up, you know. There are a lot of stocks that are very speculative, and there are other stocks that are more conservative. Those are the types of stocks we're talking about. We're not saying conservative like a money market fund that it can't go down, but it's conservative for a stock. That's the whole idea. Conservative stocks as opposed to, you know, speculative or aggressive stocks. And of course, you know, people can have a portfolio of 30 or 40 stocks where the vast majority of those stocks are of that nature, but sprinkled around, you know, based on a discussion, we might have put more aggressive stocks in there. It doesn't mean that we only buy conservative stocks. I mean, there are some stocks that we buy that are, in fact, speculative, and, you know, we talk to the clients about them and say that they're speculative. And those stocks are probably inherently more volatile, but those are the stocks that ultimately could end up giving us the biggest returns down the line. Because what's happened right now, again, is everybody is looking at the problems in the U.S., and they're worried about how it's going to affect the rest of the world. They're jumping to the same erroneous conclusions that, you know, if Americans stop spending, that the world is in trouble. The world is not in trouble. It's America's spending that has bankrupted the world or has caused the world to lose so much money. When Americans stop spending because the world stops lending, that's when true economic growth can begin. And people haven't connected those dots. And you got to remember that the problems that the rest of the world are facing emanate from America. They have to do with all the money they've lost lending money to us, right? So the source of the problems in Europe and Asia is America, right? But fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with those economies. The fundamental problems are in America. We have real structural problems. This economy is in serious, serious trouble. You know, look at the news that came out today from Whole Foods where their earnings are down 30%, and that's consistent with a number of things. You know, you had those, the Bennigan shut down their restaurants. All sorts of retailers are reporting big drops in their sales. They're closing stores. Many of them are going out of business. Our whole phony economy is collapsing. Look at the AIG numbers that they just reported after the close. These horrific losses. And, of course, big losses today out of, you know, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, whichever one it was. Our whole consumer borrow and spend economy is collapsing around us. It was destined to happen. It was a farce. You know, it's a phony economy, but we have real structural problems. And it's going to take years, maybe decades to unwind, especially with the U.S. government leaning against the market. You know, the problem is we borrowed and spent too much money. We need to start saving and stop spending, which means a huge recession if consumption is 72% of our phony economy and the politicians are resisting it. They're trying to borrow and spend the money that Americans can no longer borrow and spend. And this is, you know, exacerbating our problems. But the rest of the world is going to lose some money, but then they're going to dust themselves off and move on because they have fundamentally solid economies. They have sustainable economies. We're the problem, right? And when people realize that, then you're going to see this decoupling, and foreign stocks are going to be able to rise even though the U.S. market is going to continue to fall. And in the final analysis, I think the best strategy is to own these assets, is to own quality companies around the world and collect good dividends. I think in the long run, this is going to give us our best total return, which would be a combination of dividend yield and appreciation, as well as the foreign currency gains that I expect to get, not only in the shares, but more importantly, in the dividends. And so we just want, now, as long as we know that we're positioned properly for the end game, the rest of it is just noise. It doesn't matter. You know, the Olympics are starting tomorrow in China. And watch them. You know, watch some of the distance races. You know, the guy that is ahead on the race out of the starting blocks, he doesn't necessarily win the race, but the guy that gets the medal is the guy that crosses the finish line first, not the guy that got out of the blocks the quickest, or the guy that was ahead in the race, you know, halfway through. You know, and so what we're doing is we're positioning our clients to win, right? I'm positioning my clients to own the assets that I think are going to deliver the most purchasing power over time. And everything else is noise. And if for a while the stocks go down because some leveraged hedge fund has got a margin call or somebody is unwinding some trade, I don't care. It's all noise. I'm either going to take advantage of it by using the cash in our accounts or additional money to buy more foreign stocks at better prices and get better yields, or if I've already invested all my cash and I don't have any more, I'm just going to ride it out because it's not going to matter. Because anybody who's got paper losses right now, I think these paper losses are going to be just as real as the paper profits that people had on tech stocks and internet stocks in the late 1990s. You know, it's not going to matter. So the key thing is not to be discouraged, not to think that our message is wrong, that our strategy is wrong, just because right now the U.S. dollar value of these stocks has gone down. For all we know, in a few years, the dollar is going to have no value at all. How do we know? So what difference does it make what your stocks are valued at in the currency that's going to collapse, right? Because the person who is sitting it out, let's say somebody ignored my advice and decided to keep all their money in the money market, and now they can call up and say, you see, I was right. If I'd have followed your advice and I would have bought these foreign stocks, you know, I would have lost 10% of my money or whatever, and now I have it all safe in a CD and I haven't lost anything. Well, that's great. Well, maybe I have that conversation in a few years, and that person is broke because, you know what, he stayed in that CD, and the dollar collapsed. Meanwhile, the people who followed my advice, you know, have preserved their wealth, and maybe the stocks are 5 or 10 times what they were. But the fact that initially the person who was in cash appeared to have done the right thing means nothing, right? It means as much as the person who ignored my advice and bought dot-com stocks anyway and watched them go up. Big deal. They went up for a while, you know, and then they collapsed. And, you know, and ultimately when they collapsed, you know, all people had left was exactly what I said, was the memories of profits. And believe me, the memory of profits doesn't buy anything, right? The idea is to actually have the profits, to have the stocks. And that's what we're doing. You know, we're buying companies that we think are good businesses, that we want to own, and we want to collect the dividends. And it doesn't matter what the stocks are valued at any particular point in time. I mean, look what's happening now with the price of gold. The price of gold has had a pretty sharp drop down, and look at the silver. Look at oil prices. Oil prices got up to almost $150 a barrel. Now they're back down below $120. Does that mean that the bull market is over? I don't think so. No. But, prices went up very quickly. They pulled back. But the long-term trend is still the same. And I think these trends are going to be in motion for a long time. So we take advantage of it. Don't be upset. Don't be nervous if your accounts are down. And believe me, I've been buying foreign stocks for people for 10 years, and it hasn't been a one-way ticket. I mean, we've had plenty of times where stocks have gone against us. Now, I will say that the declines we've seen this year are the largest I've seen in the past 10 years. But this is the biggest bear market globally in probably 20 or 30 years or maybe more. So this is going to happen. This is what happens in the stock market. Stock markets go down. But ultimately, I think that we're buying good stocks at lower PEs in general with good dividend yields in currencies that are going to be rising against the dollar. We've done the right thing. We've done the right thing. And we just got to, hold on to the positions and continue to take advantage of the opportunities that the markets are presenting us, that other people's misfortunes or bad judgment are presenting us, and resist the temptation to go with the herd, to think that, hey, everything is great, go back into the financials, the U.S. has dodged a bullet, the government has saved the day, they're going to bail everybody out. They're not. The bailouts are worse than the problem. The government cure is worse than the disease. That's the big thing that you've got to understand, that everything that is being done right now is assuring the dollar's destruction and reinforcing everything that I've been saying and the reason for all the investments that we've made. Anyway, that's enough about that. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back for calls and talk about the market some more.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, we are back. And, one more quick thought. I know I've gotten an email from somebody, I forget who was basically accusing me of, trying to hide the fact that our accounts are down, or he said he hears me on television or talk about how we've been making money, or our clients have been making money, and yet his account is down. I don't try to hide the fact that our accounts are down now, or at least that stocks have been falling. People that have been with me for 5 or 10 years are making a lot of money. I mean, because we had some very, very good years up until this year. But I certainly make no attempt to hide the fact. I talk a lot about it on television. I say, yes, even our stocks are going down. My stocks are going down. Somebody sent me an email. He said about on my website, it says there's a bull market somewhere, and he's challenging me to find it. He said, where? Everything is going down. And, right now the guy is right. Everything is falling. But I still think there are bull markets. It's just that we're in corrections. No bull market doesn't have a correction. And right now, I think we're in synchronous corrections, and everything is dropping. But it doesn't mean that just because something is going down that there's not an underlying bull market there that you can take advantage of it. It's just that, there's always corrections. Nothing goes straight up. And I don't try to hide the fact that my stocks are going down. It doesn't bother me. And I own all these stocks too, right? And the fact it doesn't, discredit what I'm saying or invalidate what I'm saying, because stocks do go down. Especially now, considering what's going on. Why didn't we avoid it? That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not marketing myself as a market timer. I'm not managing the money, where I'm going to trade it, and trying to manage short-term results. That's not what I'm concerned about. As I said, you shouldn't be concerned about short-term performance either, because it means nothing. It's all this emphasis on short-term performance that has led to massive long-term losses. You know, whether it's in the banks that did the subprime, or, you know, whether it was, back in the dot-com days. I don't care about short-term performance because I know it doesn't mean anything. And you shouldn't care about it either, because it's more important for clients, because it's your money. It's your money. You care about absolute long-term performance. The only problem with short-term performance is sometimes the clients don't like to see their stocks going down, even though it's probably a good thing for most of them because they're still investing money. There are very few accounts that we manage where people have sent us all their money. You know, generally our clients are always adding to their accounts. And if you're adding to your account, believe me, it's better to add when prices are down than when prices are up. You know, but again, psychologically, people have a problem with that, but you shouldn't, right? You shouldn't have a problem with that. You should understand what we're doing and take advantage of it. But anyway, let me quickly hop to the phones. I got David on the line from California.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering which foreign stock markets you like best as long-term investments. If someone put a gun to your head and made you invest all your equity money in three country-specific ETFs for the next 20 years, which three would you buy?
You definitely got to be in China, you know. And then as far as, you know, where else I might want to go, I think Asia is probably going to be the best. So, you know, I might want to be in Singapore or, I don't know, what are the emerging markets, or Japan, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think Asia is going to have the best long term if it's going to be a 20-year time horizon. You know, and maybe even some of the Middle Eastern countries, but it's probably hard to get into some of those stocks. But I mean, Asia is definitely going to be the new center of the global economy. You know, that's going to be, you know, I mean, you know, you're talking about billions of people, and you know, they've got the demographics, they've got the infrastructure, they've got the manufacturing. You know, they're definitely going to dominate the world this century. You know, so that's where you'd want to be. I mean, if you had to just, you know, quickly focus on just one area, and you know, you couldn't touch it for 20 years. You know?
Right. I was also interested in what you thought specifically about Japan. I've read that more than half of the listed stocks there are trading below book value. The companies are holding more than $500 billion in cash and equivalents. Are you buying stocks in Japan for your clients?
We are. We are buying stocks in Japan. You know, we weren't buying them for a while. We just recently started buying them in the last year. And, yeah, you know, I think that Japan is going to emerge as an economic leader in the new economy. That's, you know, the new economy, meaning where America is, you know, is no longer the center of everything. You know, and you look at where the Nikkei was back in, you know, 1989. I mean, it's less than half of what it was back then.
Okay.
You know, they went through a big bad market. I mean, they wrung out a lot of these excesses. And, what they need to get in Japan, of course, is a sane monetary policy. They need to start raising their interest rates. I mean, and ultimately they're going to do that, but the main reason they're not doing it is they don't want to crush the dollar. But they've got to get away from this. We must support the U.S., that our prosperity is a function of how much money we give to Americans, because that's not true. This is what's screwing up all the economies. I mean, it's all these economic imbalances, and we're at the root of it because our economy is so screwed up, because the dollar is a reserve currency, and we're flooding the world with dollars but not supplying goods for people to buy. And we're not saving any money. We're just borrowing everything. We're just screwing up the whole world. And ultimately, we're screwing up ourselves, too, because we're going to have this huge economic collapse because of this. And, you know, I think the sooner, you know, the world gives us some tough love, you know, the better off we're going to be. You know, if you've got an adult son, you know, living at home, you know, freeloading, he doesn't have a job, and he's just living off of you, the best thing you can do is kick him out and force him to assume responsibility for himself. And, of course, the minute the world does that to America, they're going to immediately benefit because they won't have to support us. And ultimately we'll benefit, too, because we'll be able to support ourselves and we won't need the charity. But that's what we're living on right now. We're living on charity, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. You know, we're buying things we can't afford. We're borrowing money we can't pay back. That's charity.
Well, I appreciate your time, Peter.
Anyway, Dave, thanks for the call. Let's go to Sam from Idaho.
Hi, Peter. So I have three questions. My first question is, what's your outlook on agriculture and oil stocks, up or down, why or why not?
Well, I'm bullish, obviously, just as an asset class. I think that commodity prices are going to continue to rise, both in terms of dollars and other currencies. And you want to be exposed. You know, we just came out with a report. You know, we've been buying agriculture stocks for a while, but we finally came out with a research report on agriculture. We came up with a new one on coal as well, which is actually a pretty good time because we finally had a decent correction in these coal stocks. So, yeah, you should go to my website and download the research report on agriculture and read it. But, yeah, I'm very bullish and bullish on energy, too.
But further on that, though, agriculture-wise, I mean, what about North American ones? Because you keep saying that, you know, foreign ones are better. So North American agriculture with the slump, wouldn't people be consuming less agriculture, I guess, food or oil?
But, we're talking about global, you know, and so you can be an American company and you can export, you know. And there's a lot of plays in agriculture, for example, fertilizer. You know, it's not necessarily the agriculture itself, and you've got industries that supply agriculture. But look, the world is gonna be increasing its standard of living. They're gonna be eating better. You know, maybe not in America, but someplace. You know, and so the industry is gonna do well. And America's, you know, in the next 10 or 20 years, a lot of what American companies are gonna be doing is gonna be exporting. Because the wealthier consumers are going to be abroad, and that's where the markets are going to be.
So, Peter, second question is, do you see Asian central banks, especially China, will increase their rates in lockstep with the American central bank?
Well, the American central bank is not raising its rates. But, yeah, if the U.S. did raise rates, the foreign central banks would raise rates because they have to. They're mimicking our monetary policy. That's their problem. They have these pegged currencies, and they've adopted our irresponsible monetary policy.
When they do,
ultimately, what's going to happen is a lot of these Asian central banks and Middle Eastern central banks, they're going to start raising their rates, even though we're not.
So when they decouple, as you say, you keep using that word, when they decouple from the U.S. economy, would they not increase when U.S. does increase? Do you see that happening? Because right now,
eventually they're going to have their own monetary policies, and it's not going to matter what we do.
Mm-hmm. But in the short,
now we're screwing their economies up with all the inflation that we're creating and all the inflation that we're forcing them to create.
Mm-hmm. So you said invest in Asia. But what about American companies like GE, who operates globally? Would you?
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to buy GE. I mean, there are some good U.S. companies that you can get exposure to the world, but I wouldn't want to touch GE. I mean, I just think GE is, you know, an accident waiting to happen. I think it's a hedge fund masquerading as a company. I just wouldn't trust their balance sheet. I think there's a lot of problems there, so I would stay away. But I'm trying to focus on the foreign companies because I think they're the best value. I think they're the least exposed long term to our problems. And, you know, I just don't think you have as much political risk because I think the U.S. government is going to slap on a lot of windfalls, profit taxes on anybody in this country that's making any money. And so I'd rather invest abroad. But anyway, thanks for the call. I've got a few more to take. Glad you're listening. Next caller is Arnold from North Dakota.
I was listening to a fellow today, and he was saying we've had 20 years of credit expansion, and now all of a sudden we've reached a tipping point where that is contracting, and during this credit contraction, which is going to be very prolonged, we're going to see equity prices going down, stocks going down, gold going down, everything basically contracting. And he says that the way you know you haven't reached the bottom of this bear market is that anyone you talk to is always has some place he thinks is going to outperform in the equity markets, whether it be gold or foreign or oil or.
I mean, I disagree with what you're saying about the fact that gold's going to go down because the dollar is going to go down. See, this is the thing. Yes, the credit bubble has burst, but the government is trying to reflate it. You know, when our phony economy was growing, every time we had a goose to GNP. We needed more and more debt to accomplish it. Well, now we've got to the point where there's so much debt that nobody can take, the capacity to take on additional debt is gone. And so Americans are being forced to liquidate their debts or to stop borrowing, but the government is picking up the slack. the government is going to borrow and spend money for us because they have an endless amount of credit because they can print money. And that's what they're doing. And the Bush administration already announced a $495 billion budget deficit for the next fiscal year, which is probably going to be more than $1 trillion in a deficit. And all that money is going to be created, so the dollar is going to lose value. So gold is not going to fall during this credit contraction. It's going to spiral, up into the stratosphere. And ultimately, all these foreign stocks in terms of U.S. dollars should be a lot higher. Now, the question is, will they go up in local currency? Even though Japanese stocks could go up dramatically in dollars, will they in fact go up in yen? And I believe that many of them will. And I think the same thing will be the case with many of the markets. I think that when foreign economies reclaim their productivity, reclaim their savings, reclaim the resources of the world that they're entitled to and the production, I think global economies will be in much better shape than they are today. And I think that will be reflected in higher profitability and higher share prices. So that's what we're buying.
He was saying that the theme going forward is avoidance of risk in people, equities in general, whether it be gold, people just don't want to take on any more risk. It's a deleveraging is what he's
saying. The point is, the riskiest assets may in fact be cash, may in fact be currency. Because remember, currency has no fundamental value. It's just a piece of paper. I mean, if you were living in Zimbabwe and you were, worried about, the terrible, economy and the policies of the Zimbabwe government, and you put your money in T-bills in Zimbabwe, you're completely broke. But the people that bought the stock market, even though the Zimbabwe economy is a disaster, the people who bought stocks are much better off than the people who tried to play it safe and own cash. Because cash is just a piece of paper. There's no limit to how many the governments can create. So you can't say, oh no, in an inflationary environment, I'm worried, and so I'm going to keep my money in cash, because that's a sure way to go broke. But anyway, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I got to move along because we got a lot of people on hold. Let me take Mitch from California.
Hi, Peter. I was wondering if you got a chance to read the John Brown commentary on your website today.
I did.
When he talks about destruction demand for oil, I'm hearing a lot of, hedge funds are shorting oil and all. I mean, this doesn't, I'm not buying it. In California here, the traffic is as bad as ever. Where is this destruction demand, and why do you think prices have fallen like 25% for oil?
Well, I think there is some at the margin demand destruction in the U.S.
But not 25%.
I don't think that's why the prices have gone down. Look, I think there was a lot of speculative money. Look, when oil got up to $150 a barrel, so quickly, there's no question that oil got ahead of itself, that the bull market took on a little bit too much froth. I was looking for a correction in the price of oil. It's not going to go straight up. And that's what we've had. And you have a lot of people who are unwinding. A lot of people are now talking about the oil bear market. I was on Fox today and they were talking about the bear market in oil because it's down 20%. So, most of this is just traders. It's just noise. It's just people unwinding. Where is money flowing? People are buying financials. I mean, does that make any sense to buy these financials? No. But this is all trader money. It's hot money. It's noise. And, the bull market's on. And the best thing about this pullback in oil is that oil stocks have come down. And you guys, I love to buy these oil stocks. And, we can buy them cheaper. The same thing with the metals. Gold has come down a bit, but the gold stocks have been crushed. I've got, at least half my personal portfolio in gold stocks, and my biggest positions that I own for myself are down about 30% or more in the past month. Now, they were on all-time highs or, 52-week highs or the highest I've been a month, month and a half ago, and now in the span of a few weeks, they're down by a third. People are running for the exits. There's a lot of money in this market that's really highly leveraged. They got one foot out the door. They don't know why they're buying stuff. They're buying it because it's going up, and the minute it stops going up, they want out. But in the end, there are real fundamental reasons why gold prices are rising, why oil prices are rising. Those fundamentals have never been better. The reasons that I was buying these type of stocks in 1999 and 2000 and 2001, the things that I saw that very few people saw, I see them just as clearly today. In fact, my worst fears have been validated based on what's happened recently. So I'm as confident as ever that my forecasts are going to pan out until the very end, and that the strategy that we have is going to work. And so if I see oil coming down, if I see metals going down, I see an opportunity. I don't see a reason to panic.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, the government raises its debt limit, and why is gold going down? I would think it should be going the other way. Anyway, the last question I have for you is, you know, I hear you always making the forecast that the best-case scenario is the dollar will fall 50%, and the worst-case, of course, is it's going to fall 90%. And now that you've seen what the government did with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, do you think that now, in fact, that 90% decline the next several years is pretty much our best-case scenario?
No, it's not the best case, because there's still time for them to come to their senses and change their minds. But we're going down a very, very scary path. And what we're doing, again, is you have the government trying to resist the market forces. The market is trying to correct these imbalances. The free market is finally trying to bring American consumption into line, right? What should be happening is credit should contract. It makes it harder for people to borrow money. Interest rates should be rising. Americans should be encouraged to save money. Asset prices should be falling. Real estate prices that got much too high should be falling. You know, we need to transition a lot of our service sector employees back into manufacturing. All this stuff would happen over time if the government just stood back and let it happen. But the problem is, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens within the context of a recession. It happens within the context of people losing money, and it's not very pleasant. And the politicians don't like that because voters might not reelect them. So the politicians are trying to do whatever they can to fight the free market and to and try to get more spending and more borrowing, which is only, you know, putting gasoline on a fire, which should ultimately consume us. And so this is the danger. It is a very, very dangerous thing that we're doing. And every other country that's done this, it's been a complete disaster. But, you know, I don't know if we're going to come to our senses in time. I am very, very nervous about what's going to happen with a Barack Obama administration and with bigger majorities in Congress for the Democrats, which in their heart of hearts are socialists anyway, to see this as a great opportunity to repudiate the free market, as a call for the government to centrally plan the economy, to basically say that, look, the free market doesn't work, capitalism doesn't work. We need to come in here and we need to decide who gets paid, who gets this, you know, what goods get produced, who gets it, and they're going to try, to remodel our economy in the images that they learned when they went to college and they learned economics from all the Marxists that are, you know, in our universities, and they're going to try to, you know, centrally plan this economy because they're going to think that capitalism doesn't work. So there's a lot of danger out there, and very few people understand money in the government, have any idea about money, and how there are a lot of reasons to think that the worst case scenario is pretty, pretty bad, and even my best case scenario might be too optimistic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There is a chance that John McCain might take it. He has closed the gap quite a bit, but we'll see how it goes. But
yeah, I mean, look, I don't
give my call.
No chance. I think he has a slim chance. I think that Barack is going to have to blow it though, in order to win, because, you know, I just think that the economy is bad enough that people are going to want change, you know, regardless.
No, but Barack doesn't want to drill, and that's going to cost him, you know. And everyone thinks that drilling is the answer, and I agree with you that it's not going to drop oil prices, but at least they'll keep the money in the States as opposed to going overseas.
I mean, obviously, if we drill, great, they'll give us more oil to export. It's not going to bring the price down. The price is going to go up whether we drill or not.
Agreed.
But, you know, the thing is, I'm even more nervous, though, although, I mean, as nervous as I am about Obama, I'm even maybe more nervous about McCain, because
what?
If McCain gets in there, the administration is going to be a complete and utter failure. The economy is going to get much worse under McCain, too. And then, what are we going to get 4 years after that? Oh, my God.
Good point, yeah.
So, I mean, it might be better to take the big liberal right now, let him fail, and then maybe get a Ron Paul-type guy in 2012. That might be our only shot.
Now, Peter, I agree with you on virtually everything you ever say, but this whole Ron Paul thing, this guy doesn't have a chance in heck. I mean, I agree with you, he'll be the best president, but
I'm talking about 5 years from now, when the country is a complete mess, people are looking for real change. And it probably won't be Ron Paul because he's probably too old to run then. But maybe somebody with a similar outlook can grasp the public. Just like Ronald Reagan, you know, Ronald Reagan didn't have a chance when he challenged Gerald Ford in 1976. Everybody wrote him off as a kook, unelectable. But in 1980, Jimmy Carter, things were so bad that Reagan actually got elected in a landslide.
Yep.
And so that's what we need. We need the economy to get so bad that people are so fed up that somebody like Ron Paul can actually get elected.
I couldn't agree more, Peter, but I'm telling you, but even my dad, the people just don't believe the gold standard is the way to do it because it doesn't give us flexibility, and I keep hearing that over and over again. But I'm with you on this. I agree 100%. I think we need
to... Thanks for the call. I got to run. Let me take a quick commercial. We'll be back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, we are back, and let me quickly go back to the calls. Am I on Phil from Canada?
Yes, you are, Phil here. Thanks.
Okay, let me quickly, no more calls because I've got three more holding, and I think we only have about 14 minutes left, so let's not take any additional calls. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay, the other question is
callers.
3 weeks ago, somebody phoned and asked if it was a good idea to keep valuables, I guess gold coins, in safe deposit boxes of banks with banks failing, going under. And you said there really wasn't too much to worry about because it's the excessive debt of the bank itself and not the contents of the safety deposit boxes that's the problem. But my concern is if there's a banking crisis and the banks close their doors literally, you won't be able to get into the bank to get your items out of the safety deposit box. So should you really keep things like gold coins?
I mean, obviously you're going to have to wait until they open up the door. But, you know, the contents of a safety deposit box do not belong to the bank. They're not part of the bank's balance sheet. So if a bank fails, what you have in your safety deposit box is yours. You never have to worry about that. The one reason that I tell people that they shouldn't keep all their gold in the safety deposit box has to do with the U.S. government potentially confiscating gold, making it illegal to own gold, in which case if you have it in the safety deposit box of the bank, you're never going to get it. Because there's going to be a federal agent in every bank safety deposit. And when you come there, they're going to go with you, they're going to look in your box, and if there's any gold there, they're going to take it from you and maybe even arrest you. So if you really want to make sure you have your gold and the government doesn't take it, then you don't want to have it in the safety deposit box. But if the bank fails, that safety deposit box is not at risk.
Right. Another question, kind of change the topic. Are you bullish on silver as much as you're bullish on gold?
Yeah, in many cases I'm more bullish, but I buy them both.
Yeah, good.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Okay, I have to move along quickly because I know we're running out of time. Let me go to Vic in Minnesota.
Mr. Peter.
Yes.
I am a great fan of yours, and I have, what I did in 2005 is, I had a fully paid for house worth about $350,000 at that time in the boom time, and the interest rate was 4.18%, 15 year fixed. I borrowed 100% of the money and bought pre-1933 certified St. Gaudens and Liberty Gold Eagles. Now, most of the people say I did a stupid thing. What do you think?
Well, obviously, you know, you probably did a, you know, and, you know, you've obviously, they've gone up. So, you know, you gambled and it paid off. But, yeah, I mean, what I probably would have recommended is rather than just buy, you know, coins that don't have an income, you know, I would have bought something like dividend-paying foreign stocks with most of the money where you can get enough income to actually pay that mortgage.
Well, I have enough income to pay the mortgage 10 times over. I'm not
talking about income from your job. I'm talking about the actual transaction. Let's say you borrow 5% against your house, and then you take the money that you got and invest it with an 8% dividend. You actually are earning 3% return on money that you don't even have. And you've got a great arbitrage where you own foreign assets versus a U.S. house. So for a lot of people, I think it's a great trade. It's like you're creating your own private hedge fund, and you're creating a carry trade.
I love gold coins, too. I'm a numismatic guy.
Yeah, I know. And numismatics are different because there's a lot more to that than simply the bullion content. And so there are more ways to make and lose money. Plus, of course, when you're dealing with numismatic-type coins, you've got very big spreads between the buys, bids and the asks. So you need to have a big move up to make money, because if you buy them and sell them, you know, they got to go up 30 or 40% probably to break even.
But
thank you for the call. And let me, because I just have to be quick, because I got 10 minutes and two more callers. Let me take Matt in Maryland.
Hi. Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. Just had a quick question. Some of the eternal bulls in the market that I'm friends with, unfortunately, have been talking about a commodity bubble. They say, you know, commodities are way overpriced right now. You know, they're bound to go down. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the impression that there has to be malinvestment for a bubble to occur. So, you know, the NASDAQ bubble, obviously malinvestment there, malinvestment in the housing market recently. So I just wanted to get your opinion, and I think I know what you're going to say, but just to explain on it a little bit.
Explain what? Bubbles?
Explain why, why there is a mindset that there is going to be a commodity bubble. I'm having problems.
I don't think there's a commodity bubble. I think that there's a commodity bull market. I think the bull market certainly got ahead of itself. I think the bull market attracted some speculative money. But I don't think it's a bubble in the same sense that the NASDAQ or housing was a bubble. A bubble, I think of, is almost like, you know, a national obsession, where, you know, you have a universal opinion that the asset in question can only appreciate, that there is no more looking at the fundamentals, that people are buying assets, simply on the expectation of endless appreciation, that they, you know, that there's all kinds of, nonsense ways that they come up to justify the overvaluation, that it's almost like an obsession. A national pastime. Everybody gets caught up in it. They get caught up in the psychology that you can't lose money, that the only way to lose is not to participate. And you have that psychology, and everybody is a buyer. And, of course, you get this, you know, and the prices are rising, and the rising prices are reinforcing everybody's bad decisions. And, you know, you get these big bubbles. You know, we're not having that. I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't have a price spike in a commodity, or, you know, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a bubble going on there just because prices get too high. You know, they're gonna sell off. You're gonna get overbought. The market will pull back. But I don't see a bubble. I don't, you know, if you want to look at the psychology, you know, when I was, you know, in the 90s, every time I went out to a restaurant, anytime I was out in public, I overheard conversations about the stock market, about what stock somebody was buying. And then it was real estate. I couldn't leave my house without overhearing conversations about who remodeled this, or who just bought that, or who flipped this, or who did that. You know, I don't overhear conversations about oil, about, you know, pork bellies or wheat or gold. I mean, it's just not a national obsession yet. There isn't, you know, and of course, all the commodities that are being bought are not really being hoarded. All the oil that's being bought is being used. It's not being stored in some massive facility somewhere. There's actually a real market. People are buying the oil because they need it. They're not buying it to hold it in a container somewhere. So these are real markets. And I think that the rising commodity prices are in fact not reflecting higher prices, but the lower value of our money, right? That's what's going on. It's not that, you know, oil or nickel or, you know, or copper are more expensive. It's just that the money we use to buy these things is less valuable. So we need to exchange more paper to get the same quantity of stuff. And over, that's the underlying source of what we're seeing. Now, of course, with all these hedge funds and all this hot money around, they're looking to jump on any rising trend. You're going to get the speculative money, which is going to make for, you know, more volatility and exaggerate the swings. But underneath all that speculation are real market forces, are real supply and demand, and real inflation. And that's what's driving these markets. Anyway, thanks for the call. Let me take the last caller is John from Utah.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, John.
Hey, I love your show, by the way.
Thanks.
I have a similar question to what the last fellow said. I'm wondering what you think about the theory that I am long, let me tell you first, I am long gold, silver, Canadian dollar, and Australian dollar,
mm-hmm.
and I've had a bad week. I'm wondering about the theory that the buildup to the Chinese Olympics might have driven the price of commodities a little higher than they would be otherwise, and there may be some sort of pullback after the Olympics.
I don't know. We've already had a pullback, and the Olympics have just started. So, you know, but I don't know if there's even a bigger pullback coming. I think we've had a big pullback already in many of these base metals, you know, and, you know, for all I know that the pullback is over. I don't know. I don't know. You know, the Chinese Olympics has been a long time coming. But, you know, I don't think that all this commodity demand was a function of construction related to the Olympics. And, you know, the Chinese economy isn't going to stop growing the minute the athletes leave town. And, of course, you know, there's going to be another Olympics someplace else. I mean, there's always stuff going on. You know, there's a lot of construction, a lot of projects all around the world, a lot of stuff going on in Latin America. You know, and, you know, the demand is going to continue, and these central banks are going to keep printing money.
Tell me what you think about the pullback of the Canadian and Australian dollar. Do you think that's structural, or do you think that's just a...
No, I mean, I think, look, I think it is noise in the market. I think it's traders. I think people are unwinding positions, speculative positions, but ultimately these currencies are going to rise against the U.S. dollar. They haven't risen because of speculators. Speculators have been a part of the market, and if they all try to get out the door at the same time, they will influence the market. They will suppress the market. But once the speculators have finished unwinding their positions, the market will adjust and the prices will go back up. That's how I see it. But right now there's noise in the market. There are external factors that are running contrary to the underlying fundamentals. And ultimately, once these markets are making new highs, the speculative money will be drawn back into them, and of course it will exaggerate the moves once again. But beneath these speculative positions lies true fundamentals. And that's what we're trading, and that's what I'm investing in. I'm investing in the macroeconomic fundamentals, the big picture, the long, the 10, the 15, the 20, 25-year cycles. You know, we're long-term investors. We're doing the right thing. We're letting the other guy try to trade the market, try to time the market. Some people will do it right, and they'll get rich. Other people will do it wrong, and they'll go broke. My idea is not to go broke or get rich, just to preserve wealth, to preserve a purchasing power, to preserve an income stream and a standard of living, so that my clients who have worked a lifetime to earn money can do something to protect it and not let it evaporate because the government is going to print the dollar into oblivion, because that's what they're threatening to do. They're threatening to socialize all the losses of the housing bubble and the consumer credit bubble on the back of the dollar. All the people who can't pay their car loans and their student loans and their home mortgages, all those losses are real. The trillions of dollars that we borrowed to buy things that we couldn't afford, somebody's going to have to get stuck with that bill. And I don't want my clients to have to pay it. And the only way not to pay it is not to own the dollar. And we just have to invest prudently around the world and stay out of the currency. And just forget about all the noise.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Anyway, we're running out of time. I want to thank everybody again for listening. And, you know, remember, take advantage of what's going on. If you've got some friends, you know, that are still in the U.S. dollar that haven't opened up accounts with Euro Pacific Capital, this is a great time to do it. Not that this is necessarily the bottom. For all I know, the foreign stocks are going to go down more. But you know what? It doesn't matter. We don't need to care if they go down more. We're getting a good price. Just like if you go in a department store and it's something that you like and it's on sale and it's 50% off, you can buy it. You don't have to worry about, well, let me wait next week. Maybe it'll be 70% off. You know, maybe it will be, but maybe it won't be, or maybe by the time you get there, you know, they won't have your size anymore. And now you missed an opportunity to buy, you know, to buy the shirt that you wanted on sale. So, you know, we're having a sale on these stocks. Don't worry if the sale gets better. You don't have to be a pig. The prices are good. There's a lot of value out there, so make sure and take advantage of it. Anyway, I will see many of you in the next couple of days up in San Francisco. For those of you who I don't see, hopefully I'll see you at some time in the future at another event or at a seminar when we come to your town, which we will be doing. Anyway, that's it. Again, let me give you the number. It's 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922 to talk to a Euro Pacific Capital representative. Make sure and read the book Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, before the next book comes out in October, the little book of bull moves and bear markets. And again, you know, we have two new research reports on our website, one on coal and one on agriculture. If you haven't gotten those, make sure to check them out. You can download them on the website. And that's it. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for being here. I will be here again, same time, 8 p.m. Pacific Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on www.europac.net and on shortwave radio 5.07 megahertz. Good night, everybody.